Well, from David Bowie to Brewocracy now on KPTZ 91.9 FM, your community radio station in Port Townsend. As you know, Brewocracy Now is our weekly talk with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow, who always tends to bring us interesting guests, and today is no exception. I'll let John introduce our guest today.
Hey, thanks, Tim. A pleasure to be in the studio, and I love how we're always experimenting here at KPTZ. We have me here, and we have our esteemed guest, Cherish Cronmiller, the Executive Director of OliCap, on the Zoom screen. So I think we could do all this at the same time. I don't know if Cherish really needs an introduction to the work that she and her team do, but boy, are we lucky to have her in the community and OliCap working on a number of fronts, from emergency housing to affordable housing and services. I'm just grateful that Cherish has a few moments to spend with us here to talk about it.
Welcome, Cherish.
Yeah, thanks so much. How's that sound coming through okay?
Coming through quite well, thank you.
Okay, great.
I have to put in my little two cents here that none of this magic would have happened without John Morrow's expertise with Zoom and computers and all of that stuff. So yeah, thank
like
you, John.
Nothing like a Gen X guy trying to take the helm at the computer. That's trouble.
Well, Cherish, besides having a wonderful name, if you don't mind my saying so, you are the executive director of OliCap.
Yeah. So I took over here at OliCap on February 3rd, 2020, and it was approximately 45 days later. We were shutting our doors to some extent because of the pandemic, but very quickly making changes and, you know, addressing that crisis head on. And so it definitely tested my skills in managing crises and, you know, making sure that we were bringing services to the community that we continue to do. So that's great. But I came here from Ohio and have been in community action for 12 years. So, you know, there's 30 community action agencies in Washington, and OliCap oversees Jefferson and Clallam counties as the community action agency, and we are a private nonprofit corporation.
Well, I took a quick look at your website before going on air, and I have to say it's overwhelming. The range of services that you provide. And I learned just today, just minutes ago, that you've been, that OliCap has been in existence for 55 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. May 10th, 1966 is when they incorporated. And a lot of community action agencies started in 1964. They were formed as an effort, Johnson's War on Poverty. And so community action agencies are actually federally set forth. Community services block grant money funds them, and they have certain federal mandates. So like we have to have a tripartite board. That means one third of our board is elected officials that are, or their appointees. One third is private industry, and one third has to be low-income individuals themselves or people democratically elected to represent a low-income population. So always having that low income or perspective of the customers that we serve is important to the agency and to the work we do. So,
and the work you do is, well, I have to say, just coming into the to the station today, I passed Seventh Haven, and it just popped into my mind the enormity of that project for a nonprofit that's operating in a rural county out in the Olympic Peninsula. I mean, maybe you can tell me what goes through your mind. Is there ever a time when you get a grant of money to do a specific enormous project and you just think, my plate's full? or how does that work? This is a big project. Just tell me what your involvement in that.
Yeah, so Seventh Haven, or most people knew it as the Seventh and Hendricks Project, because that's the crossroads where it sits, down at the end of QFC and some of the Jefferson County community buildings. So that's a 43-unit affordable housing project. And, you know, wouldn't happen without the support of the city of Port Townsend and the county. helped bring this together, and the money from the Housing Trust Fund from Washington State Commerce. If that money hadn't come through, that project wouldn't be going forward. But when that project has been in the works for almost 5 years now, that they started, my predecessor Dale Wilson and Kathy Morgan, our director of housing, started that project thinking that they would try and go after tax credits, which is it's a hard hurdle to cross. But the thing with tax credits is you have to hit certain markers. And so being close to a hospital is a marker, being close to a grocery is a marker, being close on a bus line is a marker. So all of these things were very important at the time of the tax credits. We tried twice for tax credit property and didn't get it, which is not unusual for some of these rural areas that, you know, haven't had a lot of tax credit experience. But nonetheless, the Housing Trust Fund in Washington said, this project is so amazing and so needed in Port Townsend, because it's been over 15 years since affordable housing was built here, that they decided to, you know, put the majority of funding behind it. So, you know, it takes a lot, you know, to make these happen. So not only is it the money from, which it comes forth as a loan, like a 40-year loan from Commerce, then there's also a grant portion. And then we have two private loans that are out on the property. And then we've gotten a lot of other support and donations in other ways too, to try and help, you know, fund the project and bring it forward. And I tell you, Clark Construction is our general contractor, and they've just done amazing. So the project right now is on budget, and it's actually a month ahead of schedule, believe it or not. And, you know, we had to pre-purchase some stuff because at that time we were worried about supply chain. We were worried about costs, right? Because that's been all over the place during the pandemic. And so we just, you know, if you believe in a higher power or positive energy or whatnot, you know, Mother Earth, something is shining on us with this project. And I hope that continues to be the case. And, you know, lots of great work by local contractors, you know, here in our community too. So we've kept them pretty busy as well. So when you say, you know, plate runneth over, it's funny because sometimes I'll approach one of the local contractors and say, you know, do you want to bid this project or, you know, lay eyes on what we're thinking about here? And they'll be like, you know, no, we're a little too busy right now with your Seventh Haven project. So that's okay. You know, so it's nice to be able to have, and, you know, I never want to turn down, you know, potential revenue into the agency. Even if we can't do something with it, we can always partner with, you know, another entity, another great nonprofit, or, you know, the work we do with the city and the county to make sure that we're never turning away money that could come into the community. That's crucial.
I was tempted to go, Cherish, into some of the did you know factoids of like Concrete Hall into Seventh Haven, but instead of wasting a little bit of time on the weird and wacky, what you just said really resonates with me because, you know, I see the value of the city working in greater partnership with agencies, not just like OLECAP, but with kind of, you know, any agency that wants to partner with the city on something productive and good for our community. Could you help explain to those listening who might be less familiar about all that OLECAP does, how you do that with other agencies, whether they be in the housing or emergency services realm or otherwise?
Yeah, so I think one area that's often people don't know about the agency is that we help supply food across the entire peninsula. So we have our food warehouse off Otto Street here in Port Townsend, just outskirts. And that warehouse brings in the food for the various food banks across our peninsula and to a number of the tribe entities as well. And so, you know, not only are we bringing in food from the food banks, but extra donations, emergency boxes and food supplies. We also bring in our senior nutrition, where we do the home delivered meals for individuals that, you know, need to have the that type of, you know, nutrition brought to them, and then for our congregate meals as well. And all of that is a great partnership, you know, with the food banks, Jefferson County Food Bank Association, the Jefferson County Gardens, that adds to, you know, the food bank supply. All of that is crucial. You know, it's always important in the work that we're doing that, you know, we are working with our partners when it comes to the housing work that we do, right? That's a partnership between the city, the county, law enforcement, our other housing partners like, you know, Dove House, Bayside Housing, Habitat. You know, it takes all of us at the various levels to, you know, help provide for the community. You know, our energy assistance that we provide, we do that with, you know, Jefferson PUD, and then south of town here, there's actually some folks in Jefferson County who are part of like Mason PUD. So those relationships are critically important to, last year it was $1.7 million that we put back out into the community in energy assistance and weatherization services. Those weatherization services are with a for-profit, you know, construction company that we utilize that's able to meet the price parameters set forth by the federal government for weatherization. We do our, you know, early childhood and Head Start programs. So, you know, for the kiddos under 5 years of age, you know, we work in five school districts across the peninsula. So those relationships with the school districts is critically important to the work that we do as well. You know, we work with a lot of the churches, people like Coast to help supply some of the meals and funding for the emergency shelter. Our list of partners is just Bluebills, who sometimes provides us, you know, extra supplies and stuff that we maybe need for the community centers. At the community centers, we've got everything from, you know, AA to foot care to you know, child care stuff. So it's amazing at any given time, you know, that we're always working with someone. I was grateful that this year some of the rental assistance grants, we're working with a couple of the organizations that are dedicated to equity work. So the Jefferson County Anti-Racist Fund and some of the tribe work that we're doing. It just every, you know, it, there isn't a part of some of the work that we do that doesn't touch another partner organization or that we don't provide, you know, some type of supports to those other entities or they to us, like United Way, you know, giving us money for our memory care and adult care services. So it takes all of us, you know, anytime people are like, oh, you're doing great things. I always say, listen, we can't do it also without, you know, all of our volunteers. So Senior Corps, which used to be the retired senior volunteer programs, now called Senior Corps, they provide thousands of hours of volunteer commitment across the peninsula and here in Jefferson County, you know, driving people to medical appointments, helping with food prep, volunteering at the food banks. So all of that, you know, is so crucial. And I hope that, you know, that we're always being a good partner there. You know, if somebody wants to partner, you know, with the city and maybe they don't have the full capacity, right? That's what, you know, OLECAP is here to help those organizations sometimes be able to meet that capacity or come up to have some of that experience. So sometimes we just serve as a fiscal agent to help entities because of, you know, the strict auditing guidelines. I say that as two auditors are in the office next to me doing our single agency audit. But you know, last year we had over $13 million in revenue throughout the agency. So at any given month, we've got $1 million, you know, flowing through accounts payable in one way, shape, or form. So yeah, it's our partners are critical to the work we do. And that's, you know, part of our mission. And that's also part of the call of community action is working with your local partners.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ in Port Townsend, and we're speaking with Cherish Krohn-Miller, Executive Director of OLECAP, about the wide range of duties that are carried on by that organization. This is a question for John. I mean, you know, we see the tangible, we see the housing component of this. It's right there. We see it when we go to get a gallon of milk. we don't really think about the 5 years of work that went into it before, about the collaboration of the elected officials to lay the groundwork here, checking those boxes. Is it near a bus? I guess this question is for John. You know, much of what is Cherish has talked about here, I mean, can you imagine, I mean, the city of Port Townsend has a pretty full plate just keeping the city running. If you had to provide foot care, if the utility assistance, the supplemental nutrition program, our food banks, that laundry list of issues, I can't imagine how any municipality could actually function without something like an OLECAP.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, Tim. And I mean, Cherish really speaks my language here about how to work with others, because we're too small a community not to. And we really, you know, for reasons of isolation, of higher poverty rates than the national average, of, you know, inequities of all kind, I mean, we can't not work together. It's just sort of an ultimatum. And when folks are community minded in their leadership like Cherish is, it just makes everything work faster and better. And so this pipeline that has, you know, been built over time, I mean, we're seeing the benefits now of that 5 years of work from OLECAP. And I guess the call to action is, well, if we want to continue to see progress, we need to kind of, you know, double down on those efforts, which I know Cherish and her team are, and I know the city and my team are, you know, in the community as well. And I think, you know, I'll be maybe more overt than what Cherish said a few moments ago, but, you know, that wide range of programs and the volunteer efforts that can also be part of that. You know, I penned a little op-ed in a Leader a couple weeks ago, basically saying, you know, these organizations, including OLECAP, that I listed among partners on a variety of fronts on housing, get involved. I mean, of course, get involved with the city. We love people to volunteer, you know, everywhere from our police department to library to parks. I mean, you name it. But, you know, you can get directly involved with these agencies if your passion and your skill set are in those subject areas. And so, you know, I'd love anybody listening to, you know, literally pick up the phone and give OLECAP a call and say, hey, how can I help? It might be in time, might be in expertise, might be in dollars.
A good point, because the dollars are necessary, and I imagine it takes quite a few of those to do what you're doing along with your volunteers. And if I remember correctly, on your website, you said you had 160 folks working with you at OLECAP. I don't know if those are staff, volunteers, or both.
Yeah, so that's a combination of part-time and full-time staff, but yeah, I mean, at any given time, of course, we do have some open jobs, as I know the city also has some open job openings as well. We do too. I'm looking for a fiscal director and a community services director and a few other key positions. And so those are available on our website or at Indeed to look at as well. But yeah, usually about 150 staff members, and then, you know, depending on how many folks are in senior core, you know, 50 to 100 different, you know, volunteers at any given time, and, you know, spread it across the peninsula. And we've done our best. You know, it's interesting because we aren't a for-profit, you know, where I can say, oh, we made this in profits, right? Like, I can increase everyone's income. And so grants, trying to get our grants, because we do operate majority off of federal and mostly federal, but some of those federal funnel through the state, through commerce to us, getting them to understand what a living or self-sufficient wage is here in the Pacific Northwest can be tedious, right? You've got the folks in Washington, D.C. who are like, well, you know, this is what we're setting aside for salaries for this grant. Well, you know, what you set aside for salaries for somebody, you know, in Indiana may not be the same as a major, you know, area or outside a major metropolitan area or very rural areas where, you know, yeah, money can be tight and housing is expensive now. So making sure that all of our staff is over 15, 26 an hour right now, and trying to take that as high as I can when we can in our various programs to make that as equitable as possible as well is important.
Well, I want to thank you, Cherish Krohn-Miller from OLECAP. Lots of great work going on there. I mean, it's obvious as you drive through town. Your OLECAP has fingers in so much of the good work that's happening in this town, which is impressive in its scale, frankly, in my humble opinion. So I would love to follow up with you sometime. I imagine when Seventh Haven opens, we'll have a bit of a celebration, and I'll be there for that. But thank you, Cherish, and I'm going to throw it over to John Morrow for a second just to talk about a couple of things that are on his mind lately that we may want to put out to a listening audience.
Well, first, let me also thank Cherish for her time, because she's an extremely busy person, and it's just always a pleasure to interact with her. And Cherish, it was great to see you last week touring that facility, and just getting a chance to catch up. So I look forward to doing the same with you and your team soon. Two things on my mind, Tim. One is just a request for anybody interested, and the other is a little bit more philosophical. I'll start with the easy one first, and that is, we're on a pretty tight timeline on deciding about streeteries, which are the, in the right of way, wonderful little, constructions for spillover to restaurants in the streetscape. And they have been a temporary attempt to provide some relief to some of our local restaurateurs and businesses during the COVID pandemic. And hopefully now that we're turning the corner a bit on that, the sights are being set on, well, what should this be in the long term, if anything? And so on that matter, we are having an open house next Tuesday, the 29th, from 4:30 to 6 p.m. at the Cotton Building on Water Street, where you can come informally, look at boards and drawings, talk with a number of staff, and better understand what the proposals could be and actually help shape them. If you don't want to join that in-person open house, you could also take a survey, which is available on our Facebook page, as well as PT Main Streets. I believe the Chamber, Jefferson Chamber of Commerce, just put it out as well in their list. So take that survey. Help us understand how to get streeteries right for the long term, if that is the direction indeed council would like to move. We're really on a fast track to back to city council to advise direction in the coming month or so, with a deadline of May 9th. So it's pretty fast. So please help us with that. Lots of different opinions on that subject. The other one is more, I'm so encouraged by the amount of energy in the community wanting change or being passionate about issues of any kind. And I guess when folks come to me and say, hey, have you heard about this or heard about that? A lot of times I have, and sometimes I haven't. And I guess I wanted to just say to anybody who's got a cause and who has strong feelings, or even organizing for that cause, there's a way to do that that actually interfaces with public policy. And I'm not saying it's an easy dance all the time, because sometimes the answer is no or not yet. But if we don't know what those requests are, it's really hard to make that change happen. And so that, sort of cycles around in frustration or misdirected energy instead of actually informing policy change. So if in fact it's a policy change or request, you can approach the city and say, hey, this ordinance isn't working for me, or this restriction, or this, whatever it might be. That's an active conversation we want to have with the community. And I think I could speak for all seven city council members when I say that is something they are up for. That's why they're elected, to speak on behalf of their constituents and to bring issues forward to keep enhancing and polishing our current set of codes and regulations and the way we do things. And I think the other ask is, we do that as a city, department directors and city council. Now in the summer, about July, we pull together a retreat and we look at our work plan. And so I'd like to start building momentum toward a work plan that's informed by public engagement and by people who bring forward ideas and energy to, whatever it might be, in the parks and rec realm, in the, police realm, and public works and water. It doesn't really matter. Library, the city does a lot of things. We could continue to evolve and make changes in a lot of those areas. So as we build our work plan, I'd encourage engagement. That's usually in the summertime before our budget kicks off. And even, kind of in between policy changes, let us know, because if we don't know, it's hard for us to change it.
So, John Morrow, what are the nuts and bolts of that engagement? So you talked about a person that may have a problem with the city ordinance. Are you talking about going to the city council meeting? Is it a matter of clicking on a button on the website? How does that engagement, how do you encourage that engagement to happen?
Yeah, I guess I'd say two basic flavors of this. One is the, hey, there's a dead deer or a pothole outside my window. You need to come fix it. That's something you can just get on our website at cityofpt.us. And on the bottom, you'll see a clickable button saying report a concern. And so if that's a burst pipe or if that's a pothole, the city will attend to that. The other is more of a policy change. And so I think when I think about policy changes, that's really what the city council does. I mean, I'm meant to run the administrative services, executive services of the city. The city council is a legislative branch of the government. And so their job is to look at our policy and shape it and change it over time as needed. And so one way you can do that is attend a city council meeting. We're back in person for city council meetings. You can come and stand right in front of city council and make your point known in 3 minutes. You can write at publiccomment@cityofpt.us, and that will be incorporated into every city council member's packet that they read. They actually read every word of that packet. You could also send me an email if you wonder, well, is this a policy matter or is this an administrative matter? I try to at least respond to or delegate all emails that come into me or phone calls. And I could be reached at jmauro@cityofpt.us.
So I think that is a good thing to keep in mind, and we've spoken about this a number of times, but keeping in mind, we don't normally think of our city government as having a legislative and executive branch, but really, truly, that's what it is. And so if we think of our city council as that legislative branch and how we would interact with our legislator, pretty much you have it on the head.
Yeah,
as far as a policy issue.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, part of why I took this role is that this community came out in force to help hire the next city manager. And I saw that as a sign. I ran to that. Some people run away from that. And it's the kind of community I want to live in because there's energy, there's talent, there's passion, there's creativity. And I think for us to channel that into positive change is what it's all about,
And I think we'll end it with that. John Morrow, well said. And Sarah Stone-Miller, thank you again. We'll be back next Thursday at 12:30 with another edition of Brewocracy Now!